The content of this program is for people who are blind or print impaired. Hello, this is Frank Urban from the North Carolina Reading Service. Welcome to another edition of Salute a Veteran Every Day. This month on Salute a Veteran Every Day, we have brought back someone who was last here, and he had so much more to say, I thought, and was so interesting, I brought him back, Jay Wilkins. Hi, Jay.
Good morning.
Thank you for being here.
Well, it's a blessing to be out and about as an over 70 age guy.
There you go. You're kidding. No. Oh, my goodness.
And our first grandchild. His first year's birthday is this Sunday of this week.
So oh, congratulations.
First grandson will be 1 year old on Sunday.
I'll be slobbering in my oatmeal before I have a grandson or grand anything. Jay, thanks for coming back to us on this rainy day that we're recording. One of the things that Jay and I had talked about doing was bringing in his neighbor, who's a 92-year-old Navy veteran. And he's just not capable of coming in. So, Jay, I'd like you to take a few minutes and tell me some of the stories you've told about him.
Well, Don is a heck of a nice fella. He's a pipe smoker, and I'm a cigar smoker. So a couple of times a month we get together, and I get a class in history, mostly from the Navy and then from the other life that he lived as a mathematic accountant for multi-million dollar firms and doing different things. But Don was a broom handler on the cruise ships for the Navy in the Pacific Ocean, cruisers, and all, well, they were personnel carriers mostly was what he was on. Because during the cruise time, he was cleaning up the mess halls that they were eating in. But when it came time to land, he was one of the few people in the Navy that actually had experience with boating. And so he led the small landing crafts that carried the Marines to shore in various islands out on the Pacific. And he lost two ships, two of his boats, while he was over there, got out of it healthy, never had any issues. And then he lost his third boat because the captain of the ship, after the war was over with, he went out and wanted to look at something that was over in Japan and saw something that was buried that he thought would be useful to have back on his ship. So they went over to get it, and at Don's concern that it was a rocky area and it was a wooden bottom landing craft, the captain thought he knew more than Don did, and so they went in and they knocked the bottom out, and thank goodness they had a radio and were able to call someone else to come over and pick them up. But it was a heck of a story, and he still smiles, you know, 75 years after he told the story.
Uh-huh.
But Don and I are large partners with each other. He smokes a pipe that he started at age 22 after he got out of the Navy. Mm-hmm. And I smoke a cigar, so once or twice a month we get together, and I get a class of history about a man that's similar to my father. Their central vision was both gone. They have their peripheral vision, so he can see things all on the sides but not out in front of him. But his mind is as sharp as he was probably when he was 25 years old. He's just very intelligent, very outgoing man, and it's a pleasure to be out over in the Raleigh area and deal with him whenever I can.
That's amazing. And you all live in Apex, right?
We're in Apex, and he was a spinoff from the Apex Methodist Church, and that's how I found out about him. He needed to go in for some surgery, and the local member of the church that carried him couldn't go, and it turned out that I could, and so I carried him over and met him that way a year and a half ago, and we communicate multiple times a month.
That's wonderful. That's a blessing to you both. Does Don know about the reading service?
I don't think so, but he will. Assuming he's available this afternoon, I plan on probably having a light lunch and then go out there and see if he wants to smoke his pipe and me the cigar. Mm-hmm. But they do have outside roofing areas, so obviously the unexposed roofing area where we normally sit on a steel area and smoke and joke for an hour or so.
Tell stories.
It's not going to be a story today because it would be a wet story, and neither one of us is going to go down that path. But just on a security standpoint, I was really surprised. He went in a lockdown with the breakout of the Chinese-oriented problems, and they locked the facility down in for 2 or 3 days until they resolved that it wasn't a threat in America, a direct threat in America. they're able to receive guests back in the nursing home now. And this was probably statewide. I didn't know anything about it.
Wow.
Except I called him about coming over, and he said, I can't leave my room. They serve my food in my room. I don't even get out of it anymore. So it was an isolation environment that they created for the security of our elder populations that were in restricted living facilities.
Well, it sounds like they were being very cautious, which is it's good to err on the side of caution. And we're talking about the coronavirus. Is that how you say it?
Yes, yeah. I think that's correct. Mm-hmm. It's a newbie. It's not one knew anything about. Mm-hmm. The vaccines we took or shots we took didn't resolve this issue. As I was led to believe, it was generated by animals that were brought into a general, buy an animal, take him home and eat him over in China, and it just expanded from that. It was something that was rather unique and took a terrible turn.
Mm. Maybe you can introduce Dawn to the reading service by either playing this back, which when it becomes a podcast, or playing it when it plays live for the first time Wednesday afternoon at 3:30, I believe. Check your local listings. But to our audience, if you know of people, I've sort of left the Navy out because I'm so Air Force and Army centric. And Jay, I appreciate you having talking about your friend in the Navy. We are certainly open to you in the audience who either are veterans or no veterans, and you can call our number here at North Carolina Reading Service. It's 919-832-5138. And I will mention that at the end of this broadcast. And in fact, we mention it at the end of every one of our readings and programs. So you can call in and just ask to leave a message for Frank Urban that you want to recommend a veteran, or you are a veteran and want to volunteer for this. And then you can be on here like Jay, who I've roped into doing it twice. I met Jay at a exercise where we were both contractors. You hear in the news sometimes about the military using contractors. I was hired to be a role player as a public affairs officer, since I did that in the military, and Jay was hired to be, help me, Jay.
I was the defense attaché.
He was the defense attaché because he has been a defense attaché. And we get these teams who are getting ready to deploy around the globe to go through the paces with the kinds of things they may encounter, just down to the protocol of how to behave in front of a senior embassy officer, or should they interact with the ambassador, that it be as realistic as possible so that they're prepared to go when they get there. They're prepared to perform right off the bat.
Right. And this program was created about 7.5 years ago, and it's a 90-day class, primarily taught down at the Fort Bragg, Camp McCall area. And the end of the 90-day class is we create an embassy, and hypothetical, obviously it's not a real one, but people with embassy experience come to it. And these soldiers actually come in, and they get a introduction to the 6 main offices inside of an embassy, some of them with subordinates, like the public affairs guys has the university president coming in, and that type of conversation, so that they get a real one over the world view of what's happening while they're over there. But as the DAT, that is a much more exposed environment than what they would normally be exposed to when they actually do go to an embassy, because it's a very focused mission.
Mm-hmm.
But it's about probably 80-85% Army and about 15-20% Marine Corps, because there are Marines that serve in embassies. They're the security teams in most of the embassies around the world. And so it's a mixed bag as we go through that particular class. And it's in depth. That the story is that the ambassador likes the existing government.
Mm-hmm.
And the ambassador wants to bring a new team into the country to create some public affairs events that would help support the existing government.
Mm-hmm.
And it can't be produced by the U.S. military. It's just an embassy story about what has happened, what is happening, and what will happen.
Mm-hmm.
And by incorporating those three things together, hopefully that we will be able to keep the strength of the existing government in power when the next elections take place. And this even happens in countries that have, you know, like kings and queens. So it's not, mm-hmm. but they do have elected facilities inside of, and this is a goal to enhance our ambassador / presidential intent in foreign countries all over the world. Mm-hmm. It's not a very limited program.
One of the things that really impressed me in doing this is the quality of the young soldiers and Marines, an occasional Air Force.
Used to be Air Force, but the Air Force is doing their own program now. So it's they're not in our group like they were 6 or 7 years ago.
Okay, and that was a question when I said Air Force. But I've just been so impressed with them. Typically, they're headed up. It's as few as three people headed up by a captain, a young captain, which is an officer rank, headed to career, and some sergeants or even specialists who are very young. It's a lot of responsibility, and I got to where I'd ask them all, I'd do my role-playing, and then afterwards I'd say, what brought you guys into this? And they're all so dedicated and very smart. I mean, they're intimidatingly smart, a lot of them. And this one guy, his father was a vice president of a big financial firm. I won't mention it because I don't want to identify him. And tall, handsome guy. And I said, How did you get into this? And he says, well, you know, I grew up traveling with my dad and different. He was in the international portion of this large financial company that everybody would recognize the name. And I said, or he said, he wanted me to follow in his footsteps. And I thought that was the way I was going, and I'd have a fast track to move up. But I wanted to serve my country. I wanted to give back. And he was very knowledgeable in geopolitical stuff and just the geography and the names and all that. I mean, I think I'm pretty up to date, but they had me on that. Some of those names are very hard to pronounce, and they bat them around. But it's something that a lot of the public doesn't know about. It's not secret or anything, but it's just not talked about that much.
Well, it's true, and it's really. What does the federal government's interest in foreign countries? And
it ties in closely with the State Department.
It comes underneath the State Department. Yeah. State Department requests the military personnel to fulfill a mission, and they all go over there under the ambassador's control. In fact, I've taught several classes that the ambassador was displeased with what the military said or how it was interpreted, and basically terminated the role that was overseas. So it's not a once you get assigned, you get to stay forever type thing. Mm-hmm. But the initial mission is, and every mission in the real world is usually a 6-month mission. And if that rolls over well, then the next 6-month mission rolls through, and it could be going on for years. Mm-hmm. It's not necessarily just a one-term type thing, and one of the last ones that I remembered, there were minorities inside a foreign country that had very specific groups, and the ambassador's goal was to try and educate each one as to how the central government was positively affecting their particular interest in where they lived and how they got medication and how they got medical supplies and things of that mm-hmm. nature. So it was an ambassadorial outreach through the military. And again, the military was in a distant provider of the information, producer of it, but they didn't provide it. It was provided by the embassy through a variety of different procedures. Mm-hmm.
And one of the things that is an eye-opener is how close the State Department and the Department of Defense work together. That, as I got older in my career, I was amazed at that. One time I was taking a shuttle bus in Washington, D.C. that went between the State Department, the White House, and the Pentagon. And I was on that shuttle, and it stopped at the State Department, and I couldn't believe all the military people getting off and military people getting on. And it made me really feel good that there is a very close interface with state and mm-hmm. The Department of Defense. And a lot of what we do is peacemaking. And people think that the military is all about war. It's really all about peace.
It is. An establishment of the government's, or sustainment of the government's, mm-hmm. that the president is in favor of.
Yeah.
And we have other places where we do advertisement because they don't like the officials that are in control, and we try and do things to influence the next election and the next procedures or economic development. And you read that in the news every day about what's happening in different places, mm-hmm. about odd stuff taking place.
Now, lest somebody accuse me of propaganda, I'm saying all this off the top of my head. There's in the military, there's what's called the spectrum of conflict, and it goes from not only no conflict, but actually helping and interfacing, which is the level we're talking about. And then it goes up to economic sanctions and, you know, maybe hand-to-hand or fighting, not hand-to-hand, you don't see that much anymore. But the military and the State Department interface very closely. I think Jay and I's phones are causing us a little chaos here if you hear something in the background.
Well, I think that you mentioned that, and it relates to a relatively new job that I've settled to go on for 3 days out to the Midwest, and it appears that we've done military training. It was a significant investment in a huge training organization in central United States of America in the last couple of years doing this. And the message that I read into as I looked it up yesterday, and again, I don't know this is where we're going, it's realizing that they're not going to be formed forces overseas. There's going to be underground circumstances and very much what we're seeing around the world today. Mm-hmm. And how is the military going to respond in that environment? So mm-hmm. there's an initiation in training. Again, this is my assumption because mm-hmm. I haven't been given the details of the role we're going to be playing, mm-hmm. but it's a huge event, and if it works well for 1 year, then it's going to be rolled to mm-hmm. a 5-year plan. So it's the mission for the future for U.S. military.
We didn't necessarily, in fact, we didn't talk about the big military, but as long as we're into it, what do you think about the new Space Command?
Well,
we're not sure.
On my phone, I've got the little icon where I can see all the satellites that are cruising by and all this stuff, as well as the moon selections and what you're looking at when you see it. So
you have to show me that.
I have an education in that arena. So mm-hmm. I don't know that I thought that we really needed it, but the future is in space. Mm-hmm. And the security of our country, I think, to a large degree, is in space. Mm-hmm. And as more and more countries are developing weapons that are internationally dangerous, I think the more outreach we have into securing ourselves and securing our families for the future is a beneficial thing. Mm-hmm. And while I'm like anyone else, I hate to see hundreds of millions, if not billions of dollars spent in doing these things. I'd rather spend the money than spend the lives to correct these problems.
Mm-hmm. Well, I've been out at the Air Force Space Command and the U.S. Space Command, which are both in Colorado Springs. And this is just me talking. This is my personal observation. I think those have sort of morphed into this Space Command. And the president seemed dead set on making it its own command. The people in the buildings are things that were already there, U.S. Space Command in particular. Last time you were here, something very interesting, speaking about the public not knowing everything that we do in the military, the relationship between the country of Moldova and North Carolina's Air and Army National Guard. Any update on that? Or a few sentences maybe for people who didn't hear you the last time?
With the breakup of the Soviet Socialist Republic, mm-hmm. Their 14 independent countries were declared independent, and Moldova was one of them. Moldova was linked with North Carolina because of both of them having a very agricultural background into things that they do here. Ukraine ended up with California, so it just varied as you went between countries.
Mm-hmm.
But in Moldova, the outreach is stable. The existing population is educated but underemployed. They just don't have a great source of financial raising over there, and it tends to be that the poor are poor and the rich are richer.
Mm-hmm.
So it's a sad situation, but I don't think it's changed, even though they've been without an elected president for almost a year and a half now because of the conflicts in the process that they've been following.
Yeah, so, I didn't even realize that. That's amazing.
Yeah, well, it's real world, and when I went over there, there was a Soviet Socialist Republic president.
Mm-hmm.
They had a different one, a more domestic one that was not communist oriented, but they still go forward. They speak Romanian as a general language, but probably, as I think I mentioned earlier, with the breakup of the end of the Second World War, they basically exchanged 25% to 30% of the populations of the 14 different countries between primary Russia and the different countries, and Russia put them in specific locations where they thought they could be influential. If you look at Ukraine, that's exactly where the Russians had their Navy ships, and that's what they took over when it's 5 years now we had this separation of what used to be Ukraine and where we are today.
Mm-hmm.
So it's just a variety of, and there's a focus of interest in Russian as a native language, just like Ukrainian or Romanian or whatever else the language might be in the country that you're in.
Mm-hmm. How about the friendship and trade between Moldova and North Carolina? Can you speak about that a little bit?
Well, there is an international program, not just in Moldova, but in many countries around the world, where the federal government brings over specific individuals for specific areas. It could be in the educational process. It could be in the business process. It could be in the medical process. And they gather ideas here in America, and then they go back to their country and they implement them in some degree financially, some degree educationally.
Mm-hmm.
We still shipped numerous documents over here that are outdated in our local schools but are very, very more sophisticated than the limited budget in Moldova will secure. And we ship those over, some through military personnel, some through the U.S. government personnel. They do. .gov is able to ship things in the country at the ambassador's request and approval. So there's a huge variety of both the .mil and the .gov approach as we look at countries around the world. And Moldova is just one of several.
Mm-hmm.
And I know that because when the Soviet Union broke up, I think I mentioned this earlier, we had the 14 Soviet Socialist Republics with state relationships, and now there's some 73 countries around the world that have the breakup between states and the Pacific government itself. And North Carolina has Moldova, and then they have a country down in Africa. So they have a huge variation of what we do and what the different countries are looking for.
We, North Carolina, have a similar relationship with an African country. Okay. Do you know what it is off the top of your head? Or?
If you didn't ask me, I could have told you. But I've got a logbook, and when I actually do these briefings that I talked about earlier, that's one of the things I show the students, that what it was like, I guess, back in the early, late 90s, whenever the breakup started taking place, as to what it's like today and how popular it's been and what the Department of Defense thought it was going to be a five-year program, and it's now into 25 years. So it was a very well received by the embassies, and they did not want to break up this relationship for the outreach between states and the commonality between the state resources and the existing government resources.
Yeah, and it's a very mutually beneficial relationship. Good for us to be able to help other countries and help them grow and help them have a representative government. That's our goal in many ways, going back to President Kennedy. Can you tell we're doing this off the top of the head?
Well, I was reading Camp McCall, which was Special Forces. One of the things Kennedy did was he came down here and looked at it, and I was reading articles about he went back and planted this seed. And so this is an expansion of some of these training or country-generated training that we've been doing for decades now. If you're not in that category, you really don't know about it a lot of times.
Now, we were little kids when Kennedy came to Fort Bragg, but isn't there something that somebody, sought his approval for the Green Berets to wear a Green Beret.
I think that's absolutely correct. And now they've got a variety of color berets.
Yeah. If you can get to the top guy, that's the way to get it done without a lot of paperwork. You were telling me a little story about the Kinston Fire Department before we went on the air.
Oh, wow.
I told Jay, just tell some old stories like he talks to me over lunch or dinner.
Well, when they formed the 449th Aviation Group, which was basically an Apache brigade headquarters,
mm-hmm.
The North Carolina got the first Alpha model Apaches back mm-hmm. in the late 1995, I think, 96 is when it started. They created a headquarters for us down there, and it was in a World War II Army Air Corps location, because the building that was left was where the parachutes were stored. So we walked in this building, and you could see the wooden blocks in the wall where they stuffed their parachutes in. They pulled them out when they went out to fly the big triangle out there, which was a traditional airport. But at any rate, while we were down there, this was right next to the air traffic control building was next to us, and the fire department was a couple of blocks down from that. And they were looking for volunteers to be in the fire department down there. And so, obviously, I was there and wanted to be helpful while I was there. And the sad event was that while I was there, probably about 2 years, all of a sudden I heard a siren go off. And I ran outside, and the fire truck was pulling out, and I happened to be the only other fireman that was there. So I got on the back of the truck. And what had happened is a father and his daughter were flying from New York to Miami. Halfway down was Kinston. I assume that's why they stopped there to get fuel.
Mm-hmm.
But when they took off, the front door of their storage area, which was out in front of the cockpit, popped open and a suitcase fell out. Well, obviously, the pilot was still in a climbing low airspeed mode. He was just basically getting off the ground mm-hmm. and circulating. And rather than doing the traditional thing, which is always make your turn into the wind, he made his turn with the wind. And when he made his turn with the wind, his forward airspeed was not enough to create lift. He spiraled into the ground, and that's why the alarm had gone off.
Right.
It had landed maybe a mile from where we physically were located, but all three of them were in the aircraft. It was completely on fire, and even though I could get close to it with the deflaming mechanism that I had, it was nothing I could do other than regret the error in making a downwind turn instead of an into the wind turn. So
mm-hmm.
I don't think I'll ever forget that, but I'm lucky to still be here to talk about it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and that's what the Wright brothers discovered, is you needed the lift.
Yeah. Into the wind.
And into the wind. Jay, thanks so much for coming back to Salute a Veteran Every Day. We salute you for your service to our country and to our state.
Thank you all as well.
Well, regrettably, we've run out of time for this week's edition of Salute a Veteran Every Day. The content of this program is intended for people who are blind or print impaired. This broadcast is readily available as a podcast at our website, ncreadingservice.org, as are most of our programs. If you have any comments or questions, please call us at 919-832-5138. I'm Frank Urban from the North Carolina Reading Service. See you next time.